What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I feel like I wasn't able to communicate with spirit until I stopped drinking. I think the alcohol was blocking my channel.
I talked with Kathleen Reddy Diane, or Kathleen Diane, before. The thing that happened that we didn't really talk about more was, it's almost like an NDE as she describes it. I'll let her in her own words tell you. Since we've spoken, you have a new book, and these books both focus on lives between lives, choosing your life before you're born, and meeting of souls. So reincarnation, you have a mediumship background that might not have been front and center, but as you develop the books, I probably came more to life. So thank you for talking with me again. I'm looking forward to seeing where you are now.
Yes. Hi, Wendy. Thank you for having me on. So I wrote these books in response to having mediumship experiences. I guess I was in my late 30s by the time I started communicating with spirit. And that happened after a couple of losses in my life. Spirit started connecting with me. I'd like to just move back a moment, though, and tell you that I think when you talked about a possible near-death experience, just to give you a timeline of how this all went, I was in my 20s, and I was drinking alcoholically. I had drank all through my teenage years, and I was, you know, addicted and really having a hard time. I was deeply depressed, and my life was coming pretty close to the end, I think. And I was 26 years old, and one night I drank myself to sleep like I did every night, and in the middle of that, I had this incredible dream. That's the way I saw it at the time. I had never had an experience like this, but what happened is this woman approached me, and I thought of her at the time as being an angel, something along that line. When I was in her presence, she felt like love and peace, and I felt that she, I didn't feel it, I knew it, that she knew me. She understood me. She had a complete understanding of who I was. And in this dream, she brought me to the spirit world, and I can remember still just really not the whole thing. And I can't remember all the things she said. What I do recall is her saying, "My name is Elizabeth," introducing herself to me and taking my hand and bringing me along this journey. And we were having this conversation, I believe, about the course of my life, as it was going to continue or not continue. And I was looking out over this just gorgeous sort of valley with lots of different kinds of, you know, flowers and colors, and there was water. And it, to me, it was like Earth, but it was more than that, if that's a way to explain it. It was, there were more colors. Everything was brighter. The air was brighter. It felt like I was in a different place. And I had this, you know, meeting with her, and we discussed whatever was said between us. I woke up and I thought, crazy dream, right? Not too long after that, I ended up in a rehab, and I spent 2 months there getting sober. And then I really dove in and became sober in my life, and I'm still sober now. And I mentioned that because I feel like I wasn't able to communicate with spirit until I stopped drinking. I think the alcohol was blocking my channel, and I think I needed this kind of an intervention. It was going to be someone had to really come and get me and talk to me in order to break through.
That would get your attention. I mean, you know, angel up close and personal saying, here, this is a path you might take. Did you feel like it was an either or situation? If you didn't clean up, then there might be some consequences?
You know, I can't say specifically as to those words, but it did feel to me like we needed to make a decision about what was going to be the direction. And she was giving me this glimpse. This is the spirit world. This is you know, where we were. I believe that was when I had to make the decision. And when I say I don't mean my brain, I mean my soul. I think my soul had to step up and navigate my life in a different manner, or I wasn't going to have that opportunity. And I believe I was shown the difference in what would have happened, although I don't have recollection of that, what was shown to me. But it did happen very shortly thereafter that I ended up getting help.
That you might have been scared straight.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good way to put it, I guess.
Yeah.
I didn't see it coming until then. Let's put it that way. I had no thought of getting sober. I was afraid of the whole idea of it. I didn't admit that I was an addict to anybody, you know, and that happened, and then everything shifted.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean you needed to have that memory in order to make it stick. It's something said, okay, now's the time. And that, you were what? You said 26?
Yes.
That's young. I mean, that's really, when you're trying to get sober and everybody's out partying, that's a tough shift.
It is indeed. I will say that I was no longer out partying with my friends. I was sitting home alone and I was drinking whenever I could. I was physically addicted to alcohol. You know, I'd had DTs. I'd gone through some, you know, the physical addiction, all those issues that come with it. And I was in rough shape. And when I was given this help, which was my aunt helped me, and she introduced me to this man who was a doctor, who was a recovering alcoholic, and he came out to the house to see me. I was staying with her. She flew me down to where she lived in Florida, and he came out to see me, and he said to me, if you don't stop drinking, you're not going to see 27. And that put quite a scare in me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe more fear there than the idea of going into a rehab for 2 months and the idea of you can never drink again, which is, I think, is the scariest phrase that's ever been said to me, because at the time you don't know any other way of living.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, how am I going to manage my life? Because I've been managing it, however successful with the alcohol, and all of a sudden you lose your crutch.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So with that though, when you were able to basically bridge that to learning and becoming alcohol free, not dependent, then your mediumship kicked in. Were you afraid of that at some point? You had to have had something as a kid that hinted that this might be, or maybe not. How did that factor in?
You know, I was raised Catholic, and I had really wonderful parents, very supportive parents. So when I say that fear was put into me by religion, I don't mean by them, because that's certainly, I don't remember them ever saying anything like that to me, but certainly taking CCD classes, that kind of thing, there was talk about the devil and demons and, you know, this darker side of life, and you better do these things or you're going to, you know, end up there. So that's definitely in the back of my mind, you know, and as I started opening up, I was afraid, and sometimes I crawl back into that fear, to be honest. I don't feel good about saying that, but it's the truth. I do sometimes. But, you know, I had another one of these, like, experiences. After I was sober, one of my sisters passed away. And before she passed away, we both sort of had a dream about it, that it was coming. And my dream, it was just, I was asleep, and I think now it was direct voice or it was clairaudience, because I do have that ability. I have, you know, I can hear clairaudiently when someone, when a spirit speaking to me. But I was asleep and I heard the words 10 more days, very booming sound, right?
Yeah.
And I woke up afraid. I didn't know what that was. And I thought, I didn't know anything about spirit guides or, you know, continuation of life. I didn't have any of that knowledge at that time. And it just really scared me. And I went back to that, oh, that religious thing of like, oh, maybe it's God, you know, or worse, someone's telling me, hey, your time's up, you know. My sister had a similar dream that she was about to pass. And we were both pretty scared. And the voice had said 10 more days. I would say it was 2 weeks. But 2 weeks after that, my sister passed away unexpectedly. So that was almost, again, somebody intervening before I was actually open and able to receive messages. It came during sleep. So this is the experiences that led me to opening up. And then the final one was that my sister Mary, who passed away a few months after she died, I was sleeping and I saw her. I could see the whole room. I could see her. I could see myself. And I, you know, just sudden awareness when you're sleeping and suddenly there's this awareness. I don't know if you've had a spirit visitation before, but it happens like that.
Yes.
And I saw her walking into the bedroom and I saw that she had two figures behind her that were following her in sort of, I think they were, gosh, it almost felt like, you know, they were chaperoning her or something. They were helping her to be there with me.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat on the bed and she held my hand and we had a conversation. Now, at the end of that, I watched her stand up and walk out through the wall, and her two friends went out behind her. After that happened, I became very curious about afterlife and just the continuation of the spirit, because I was starting to understand that she wasn't gone, you know, and that sounds like a mild way of saying it after a spirit visits you, but it is, you know, so in your mind, the physical part of life, that it's hard to deny it when you see your sister who's passed, and, you know, to move on to the idea that just because her body has passed, that doesn't mean that her spirit has.
What did she tell you?
She told me, we talked about that she has two children and she asked me to watch over them. And one of them is my goddaughter and we are still very close. And she said that she was going to be moving on someplace that was something to do with learning, that this was necessary for her to go. And I don't know what this place was, if it's a different dimension or what it was, but there was some place she had to go, there was something she had to go through. And after that, she would be coming back. And she wanted me to know that she wouldn't be really like right here available, kind of. So she was saying, listen, if you don't feel me here, I'm coming back, you know, because she was thinking at that time, I guess she must have known that I had mediumship ability and was thinking, if you're not feeling me, you think I've gone, but I haven't. I'm, you know, I'm just over here. So that was the basis of the conversation.
Okay. So since then, has she reappeared?
She has spoken to me after I opened up. I've spoken to her many, many hundreds of times. And I haven't seen her the way I saw her in that dream. But when I know she's around, sometimes I see spirit lights, particularly in my home. And if it's Mary, I see pink. And I've seen her even appear in those quick dreams to me where I can see her as, you know, exactly as she was, but, you know, perfect, which is how I feel like I see spirits when they look like the same person, but there's nothing wrong. There's no worry. There's no, you know, worry lines. There's no aging or anything. They just look perfect. And when I see her, for some reason, she's always wearing pink. And then when I see the light in the house, it's sort of this amorphous pink light that's around. And I just know that's Mary.
Okay. Do you have visitations from other beings, entities, spirits?
Yes, I do. I have a very close friend from when I was younger. He has become one of my teachers. And when I see him, I see blue light. And he's really the first one who broke through and helped me become a medium. I just started having this sense. He died very quickly. He died 3 days after we had spoken for the first time in 20 years. And we had this very important conversation where we, you know, made our apologies to each other. We had had, you know, been in a relationship that didn't end well. And we had a really nice hour-long conversation and ended it with, you know, I love you too, and hung up. And 3 days later, he died. And I will always, you know, believe that his soul knew he was leaving and he came to see me on his way out.
Is he the basis for your books? Because you talk about with the afterlife, the souls reconnecting, and that sounds like a really strong soulmate type or soul companion, soul guide with that relationship with him.
Yeah, I did dedicate the book before we were born to him, because we do have other we other have had other lifetimes where we've been together. And I learned all this, you know, after he passed. And it everything that has been said to me about that makes sense. You know, the figures, the characters who are in before we were born are fictional characters, but certainly the information that I received from Spirit played a huge role. I mean, that was the whole purpose of me writing it, because I started to understand that the soul is eternal. And I understood that this is one little piece of it. This little life, this physical life I'm in now, is one part of it. And as significant as it is to me in this body right now, this is only one little piece. And when I pass on, I'm going to continue. And this man and other people, my sister and my mom and dad and different people who are on the other side, they've continued as well. And we will all continue. And, you know, there are soul families, there are soul partnerships, there's all different kinds of soul mates and soul partners. And part of the reason I wrote Meet Me in Heaven is because I wanted to talk about different kinds of soul connections. And there's like sibling partnerships in Meet Me in Heaven. Even though we have the two romantic partners, mm-hmm. you know, Ilya and Callie, who incarnate, and before we were born, they incarnate again and meet me in heaven, but they have a very different kind of life, and it's less complicated, and it's, you know, it's a little bit easier to take the course that they're on. And, but they both have very strong sibling partnerships.
Well, it sounds like, and knowing your past with the alcohol issue, and then also just, you know, the mediumship, knowing that the characters that you've chosen in Before You Were Born, or Before We Were Born, one of them has fetal alcohol syndrome, and the other one, the male, and the female has a basically an okay life. But the challenge is to make the connection, because they had a pre-birth agreement, and then they come back in forms that they hadn't really anticipated, the difficulty of coming together. That's like, yes. Okay, you know, that's the humor that Spirit has. Okay, you've signed, and here's the fine print. Good luck.
Yeah. Exactly. Because, you know, it's so funny because, you know, I take some gruff from readers sometimes about those two because of some of the decisions. Mm-hmm. But honestly, you know, how many of us, you know, meet our soulmate and stay with them the whole life, and there's no problems and there's no breakups and there's no, you know, I wanted it to be a realistic, you know, time that they spend on earth. Like, what would it really be like for these two? That was the way I thought it would go, based on their, not just their history as, you know, souls who travel together, because that does keep them together.
Yeah.
You know, it really does. And even though it's a bumpy road.
Yes, it is.
You know, but they, you know.
Yes, it is.
Yes. But they know each other. You know, there's something deep in each one of them that understands, I need this other person. You know, this is where I feel, you know, whole.
In that way, yes, it's a story that goes beyond the superficial to know there's something about the connection that feels right. And that is so hard to put into words because we're so stuck with language and trying to describe something that is ephemeral, something that's beyond words, that's magical, that's wonderful, that's, my gosh, there aren't enough euphemisms for me to call it, but that's hard. It's just, you know, right place, right time, right person. I can do all sorts of dumb things and that person will still accept me for who I am and know, well, that's not the me that I always have been. It's an interesting look, mm-hmm. but you know, but they accept you for who you are. That's unconditional love. And that's the soul, I think, that comes through. And that's what you're writing about in these stories. And the book, the first one, Before We Were Born, that kind of kicks off the characters. And then when they come back and Meet Me in Heaven, then it sounds like you have expanded, trying to show the other dimensions of friendship, of belonging, of being, of knowing.
Yes. It's still the story of the same souls, this time without the limitations. Because when Ilya, this time, he's not born with fetal alcohol syndrome, and you get to see his real potential and what he can do with this physical life when he's given that opportunity. It's an easier path for him. Not completely straight, and, you know, things happen in life, but it's a very different lifetime for him because he doesn't have that disability. So it is an important thing that I wanted to talk about with these two, but also, the friendships that, I mean, if they're kids, when they meet Me in Heaven, they meet when they're 12 years old and they're on the beach and they're on summer vacation and they know there's something about each other. They're drawn to each other. And it's just a whole different way of looking at that union.
Do you remember any of your past lives?
I have had flashes of them. And I have been told directly through me and from other mediums that I was Native American in one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I will sometimes say, I was at the spiritualist church one time and I was being called on by the medium and she's like, why do you have a whole crowd of Native Americans standing around you? And I say, because they're my family, you know, they are, even though not this life, but they were in another life. And I have a spirit that communicates with me, not often, but once in a while he'll come down and he is, was my father in a past life. And he is just this really wise teacher.
I think some of that's fascinating. I do have memories of that too, in specific places that are part of my past life. And that does have that element to it. My husband, when he was about 3 or 4, he remembers being in the living room and he remembers the clothing he was wearing. He was playing, he was creating something that was a cougar from a cutout from a cereal box. He was putting this together and this all of a sudden, a Native American man showed up and he was wearing the moccasins that are like the knee high and he was dressed in full wardrobe, took mm-hmm. his hand and said, I want to show you something. And he said, the minute he took his hand, he was out in a field and he said, this is your responsibility. And then he said, your mother's calling, your mother's looking for you. And he stayed right in the living room. And the Native American man vanished and he had that memory and that sense of, oh, now what? But that very clear visitation. And I had a memory, a pre-memory of the man I'm married to and a past life we had. And they showed me the image that we look like what I would say an Eskimo. It was very cold. It was in that kind of terrain, dressed in very warm clothing and our faces completely different than what we looked. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so real and such an impression, but trying to indicate to me that we've been here before. We've been around the block a time or two and here we go again. And it doesn't mean things are meant to be perfect. It's just showing you that this is part of it. This is part of it, all of it, ups and downs, the sideways, in-betweens, reconnecting, and going, wow, I know you, kind of.
Yes.
I know you, kind of.
Yeah, that's wild.
So, well, that's why I asked, because, you know, some of us get those little impressions, and it could be a fleeting moment, a glimpse, or somebody says, hey, and it resonates. And so when they identify the crowd around you, and you're like, yeah, you know, it's an affirmation of, yes, what I am experiencing is visible on some plane to others around me. And that's, I think, expanding as we're more comfortable to talk about these kinds of topics. And more people are talking about near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, and just stuff that was before limited. You didn't want to get shamed or ostracized or made fun of. It happened, but I can't talk to anybody. And it's nice to be able to share the stories.
It is nice, and it's fascinating to me how quickly this has become an open topic, all of it, all the spirituality. When I first wrote Before We Were Born, I wrote it under a different title, and I didn't say anything about mediumship. I wasn't comfortable with people, even people close to me in my life, knowing my husband and I always communicated together. So he knows everything. And, you know, we had all this vast information and I thought how to share this, you know, because most people are not open to hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
But now things have changed.
Yeah. It makes a huge difference. I remember when I was researching things like tarot back in the 90s, early 90s, late 80s, looking desperately looking for books and information and needing to go to a bookstore, we didn't have the internet. And now I can connect with somebody from Peru or from Egypt or from South America, somewhere else, Brazil. You know, it's just all these open doors that before now we didn't have access. And we realized people all over the world experience these kind of things that make us go, there's so much more to life than what our day-to-day 9-to-5 suggests. That's another thing. Were you an attorney?
I was. I was an attorney when I became a medium during that time. And yeah, it's a crazy idea that I'm, you know, I'm in a law firm working during the day and coming home and, you know, talking to spirits at night. But that was literally what was happening.
Legal advice for the spirit world?
Yeah. Might have been better the other way around. Yeah. Spiritual advice for the legal, you know. But
that would come in handy.
Yeah, it would have.
There might be a few who would be scared straight. But the thing is, that's the deal about this. We have these judgments of, well, you have to be a certain person to be able to tune in. You're not connected to your intuition if you have a certain role model, a profile, you know, some kind of profession. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that isn't how it works. It's there. It's just a matter of, am I paying attention? Am I, you know, is it something that I can develop, grow into, allow? And it is. It's just that we haven't been educated that that is possible. And when you stumble into it, like you said, when you had that experience of the angel showing up, and saying, let me show you something. That was profound.
It was. And honestly, all those different experiences that I told you about, the first one with meeting this woman who I thought was an angel. Maybe she was an angel. I don't know anything about, you know, the angelic, that whole group. I've never communicated other than one time. There was one exception to that. And that was the day I finished writing before we were born. I was exhausted. I finally put the last little bit in it, and I went upstairs to lay down, and somebody was trying to get through, and they came through. I don't usually communicate by myself, but it came through very quickly, and it was this person that said it was a group of angels saying thank you for writing this.
Yeah. That's like nobody else can understand that. It's personal. And when you've achieved a goal that's really, on some level, like a touchdown, like, oh my gosh, you know, this is it. And you can't share it because people don't know how important it is. But when you get it from the spirit realm, and when they say, all right, you know, congratulations, wow, you did it. Then it's like I passed a hurdle. I passed some kind of a barrier I wasn't able to cross before. And here I am, and I can go forward. I've done this. And so it's almost liberating to know that there's that acceptance and that on some other level, something watching over you saying you're going to get it. You'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's mind blowing. You know, even the quote unquote dream that I had before my sister died, someone to say, you know, 10 more days. To me, there was somebody else who was there communicating with me. I was sound asleep, not aware that anybody was with me. And suddenly this being spoke to me. And, you know, that in itself was huge because now it's like, I understand now that we're never alone. We have spirit guides who stay around us. And I mean, they are dedicated to being with us on this physical journey. And that is unbelievable, too, to think about that. Like people that are wanting to help you and uplift you and, you know, just be there to make sure you're okay. You know, that's incredible.
I've had some life-saving encounters, and they were right beside me. And my feeling was, you've been here all along, and you're just now doing something. What? It was, you know, but it was a thing of, you know, somebody else, my life was in danger and there was a little intervention. One told me to run. The other one told me something different. And each time though, well, the other one, I was going to respond by trying to attack, basically re-engage the person who had tried to attack me. And the guide beside me said, karma, And I'm like, what? I could have, you know, I was going to prevent him from doing anything, you know, to potentially somebody else. I was going to be a savior. And they said, no. That is not on your, you didn't punch that ticket. Just stop. And because the explanation I got was, at this point, no harm, no foul. I redirected by the conversation we had, and it could go forward. If I reengaged, I was the perpetrator. I didn't, it's like, what? It was a whole back logic to that, that I had, that they explained as to why, you know, why stop. And the karma was the initial thing that stopped me in my tracks as I'm watching this person disappear into the night. And I wasn't hurt, but it was that thing of, I did fight and I did have a conversation and maybe something changed. I won't know. I don't have to know. I just know that there are times when we feel like if we do something, whether it's anger, whether it's fighting, whether it's attacking and trying to preserve something that we feel attached to or we're going to help somebody else, if it isn't a situation where you are, your life is threatened, somebody else's life is threatened, then it's the same as starting a fight. And that's that turn the other cheek. It isn't meant to say that you're a coward. It's meant to say, this isn't my fight. This isn't my fight.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know.
Yeah. The violence. Yeah. It's saying no to violence.
Yeah. It's saying, I got the word across. This is not going to happen. No. And the adrenaline was so high that I had all the power in that moment to make a dent. And it was three stories and a hard fall on cement. And I was just thinking, okay, this will work. And they were saying, that wasn't why we got you free. Okay, you know, honey, you're kind of overdoing it. Just stop. You know, but that was it. It was the intervention was meant to intervene and stop it, not continue it forward.
I see.
So things are, you know, for us here, everything is so, I don't know, cut and dry, black and white. And once you step back and say, what was the purpose? What did I learn? And that's the question for you. With this, you are still going forward. You're sharing more of your story than you ever have before. And the books, you're getting some great reviews on your books. So the stories resonate. This is the right time for them. What in at this moment, what's the biggest for you, the biggest thing that has changed your life?
Knowing that I'm not going to die and neither are the people that I love.
That death isn't the end.
Death isn't the end. Yeah, it's just, it's a transition. It's a change. But it isn't what it looks like because it looks so terribly scary, you know. And I know, you know, if you've lost someone you love and you've gone to the funeral, it looks like the end. And I understand because it looked that way to me too. My mom died when I was, you know, barely sober. I was 29 and, you know, I was having, you know, all these, I had dreams about her and things like that. It was starting, but I wasn't a medium yet. I didn't have all this information of, you know, it's okay. You're going to be together again. I didn't have any of that. It was just pure grief.
I think some of that though, is that the compassion of knowing what it is like when you lose somebody, it's to the core. It's you know, there's no getting around it. I remember when I lost my grandmother, I was just so, it was intense. And yet she came to me and she took the grief away like 3 days after I was in pain. And it just, and I can't explain it. I don't know why it hit me so hard, but it was just that all of a sudden, that their void. And then she was there and all of a sudden I had no pain. It was completely gone. And you know, when you mentioned that pink color, my grandmother was pink. And yeah, I've had some other experiences with that pink energy. It's wonderful. It's one of those that's it's like effervescent. You just bubble and it's a wonderful feeling. And so she had that, and that was, it took away the grief. It took away the pain. And, you know, I knew there was an ending, but it didn't hurt so much.
I see. That's wonderful. It's wonderful that she was able to do that for you.
We don't have all the answers. I don't know that we're supposed to. I think that's the whole point of being here, is to learn as you grow.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Okay, so now, is there a third installment of this?
I'm sure there will be, but I am not there yet. I have toyed with the idea of going back in time and making Before We Were Born the second book in the series.
Uh-huh.
But we'll see. We'll see about that. I'd have to do a lot of research, historical research, to make that work. So I would only want to do it if it felt authentic. So we'll see. They'll definitely continue.
Well, that would be a neat way to approach it, because if they had an easier time, that would set it up for all of the difficulties of the then second installment. To say, you'd think they were going to be, you know, just kind of going along perfect, everything's okay, and then they hit these roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh.
Yes.
You know, yeah, so the sequence would be, okay, well then, along that line, this is the current book. And so you're basically just talking a lot more about what the two souls are learning and the other relationships around them. And it's not quite the same school of hard knocks that we experienced in the first book.
That's right. And they're both using the skills, the abilities, the sensibilities, I guess, that they've learned during past lives. They bring them forward. So Callie, this time, is born to a family that has an autistic son, and the parents are like wonderful people, but they don't understand him very well. And he's having trouble communicating. And so she's born there on purpose because she is an extremely intuitive soul. She's lived through enough that she knows how to communicate it. In this story, she starts communicating with him before she's born. She starts, as he's a toddler, they're able to communicate enough, and they have this really beautiful bond. So when she comes forth, he's incredibly important to her, and they also have this lifetime together.
Are you okay talking about another book that the customers who've read it on Amazon are giving you rave reviews for, and that's L.A. Ice?
I am okay talking about that. That book is... It does have some hints of spirituality in it, some of the things we've talked about, but it was really written, I wanted to talk about alcoholism and drug addiction and to look at it without judgment and stereotypes. And so I have these two people meeting inside a drug rehab, and they're, you know, they fall in love. And there's this other, like all the people that they become friends with, they all have these kind of rough paths, different things that they've all gone through that brought them where they are. And they're just unique and wonderful people. And I wanted to really shine a light on that, because I think as a society, we tend to put addicts in a certain box and say, oh, this person's an addict, but that's just one thing in their life. But they're a soul. They're a beautiful soul that came forth. This is what that's about. It has a lot to do with addiction and what that does to us and you know, how we can get out of it. And
from what the readers are saying, it resonates. You're telling a core group of people who have been in some cases given up for dead, shunned, ostracized, go away, leave me, you know, you're a failure, you're a loser, you know, you can't quit drinking, you can't fix yourself, any way that you can say not worthy, that's what the yes. light is cast on an addict. And the fact that you try to get sober, you have people around saying, you'll never get sober, you'll never work. And especially if you go back into the core group who was kind of there for the first fall, that's real. And it's hard. It isn't easy. And each day when you wake up and say, I'm sober today from having been around in that lifestyle, it's an achievement. It's an accomplishment. And for some, it's hard won. And you know that story. So it's really nice to see the reviews that say that you got it and that they love the relationships that you play out in this story. The one of them, she's saying that this is, I'm real familiar with this. I was going through it and I discovered that this is doable, that the rehab mm-hmm. stay, that the challenges that they face, they root for the characters that you've created. So you've touched mm-hmm. a nerve. I think that it's core for a lot of people who either know someone or are in that situation. And it's more than we realize, I think.
Thank you for saying that. That's, you said something a minute or two back about, you know, that people who are active addicts are seen as not worthy. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I wasn't worthy. I felt that way. I had no self-esteem or confidence, and I just felt so ashamed of where I was in my life. And once I was able to move past the alcohol and start to live my life without it, it took a while. It took a bit, you know, but I was 26, and by the time I was, I think I was 32 when I decided I was going to go to law school. And that came from some confidence that I had gained, you know, and realized, like, I'm just going to apply. I'm going to see if they'll let me in, you know, and they did.
They don't know my label.
They don't know. Yeah. They don't know about that. Uh-huh. But, they did. You know, I worked hard. I took the LSAT and I got in. And, you know, these different things, you know, you find out about yourself because, you know, I still do that. I mean, I still sometimes feel like, I don't know, like you underestimate who you are, I guess. But my life has been really like such a wonderful like tapestry of the people and the experiences I've had since I got sober. But I'm well aware it might not have gone that way. You know, it's a powerful grip that addiction has on you. And I just feel that we need to make sure we don't stop seeing these people as, you know, worthy souls, mm-hmm. people that are here and they're going through stuff and they're learning. And honestly, I mean, I feel like I have more sensitivity in my life because I went through that experience. I think that we live through the things we live through, you know, so that they can help us and help others. And I like to feel like that's why I went through it the way I did.
The headlines right now are really focused on Dolly Parton and a lot of the things that she did. She died at 80. One of the things that is coming up in the constant comments that I've seen about a film role that she was with and still Sylvester Stallone, they were in a movie together and apparently out and about, and she took a shawl that she was wearing, her personal shawl, and she laid it over a man who was homeless, and he picked it up and he said, "Don't throw your nice shawl on that bum." And she immediately went over and put it right back on him and said, I'll not use her phrasing that's been quoted, I'll say, idiot. If that could have been you. And then the story was that he went back the next day with a blanket. He bought a blanket and they remain lifelong friends. But it's that mindset. She grew up in poverty. She grew up around, her whole lifestyle. And she didn't choose to judge others and let them stay down. Her whole goal was to say anything is possible. You can achieve your dreams. But he had said that the bum, we made something of ourselves. He could too, and he didn't. And she was saying, hold your judgment. That could have been you. You're not going to make me have that opinion. And that was just, you know, a role model.
Yeah, and you can't get too much in your head about, oh, well, why can't he do this? You know, because you don't know what his challenges are. You know, it's not the same life. It's not, you know, and don't pat yourself on the back too hard for that accomplishment because, you know, it doesn't mean that everyone can do that at every, you know, point in their life. And,
right.
And you're very, you're lucky. You've had some opportunities. You've, you know, different things unfold differently for every life. But you can't be in your ego about it.
I think we have to allow that whenever we see somebody, it's a window. It's just a window in passing. And the next time we see them, they may be something different. And it may be a different time. We may be a different person. I know the things that I've done, I felt really, really stupid about that I would like to erase. And hopefully people have amnesia.
I have those too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's like, I can't undo it. All I can do is say, I've moved on. I'm not going to make that same choice, that same decision, that same, but that's it. That's it. That knowing that if we choose to hold that in the same place, then we're not allowing our own growth. And that's part of it. But your stories deal with the spirit side of it too. And the thing I think is really important is that you bring to it, we're not alone, never alone. With the mediumship background you have, then that I think is the underscore that allows you to speak that kind of language without questioning, without doubt, and letting others in on that reality that there's always someone here to help. You have to ask a lot of times. And if they are on your side, they might step in like mine did and say, karma, don't do that.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you have information that helped you in your life and you can pass that on to somebody else that it might help them, you know, that was my thought, because I lost my fear of death after having these communications, and really early on in it, I started thinking, oh my God, what am I so afraid of? You know, and also just grief. It just helped so much because I grieved so hard for my mom, and mm-hmm. I just didn't think I'd ever get past that. And it helped me so much.
Yeah. The really cool experience was seeing your sister walk through the wall.
Yeah.
That is, that's right there, a bookmark that says, pay attention. This is really cool. And the two who were with her, my guess is that was the energy that was required to be able to make the connection. And so they were just there making sure that she connected the dots that she wanted to. And I think there's no way for us on this side to really appreciate the expanse that we have ahead of us without the body. Out-of-body experience helps, near-death experience helps. But from this vantage point, I think we are only allowed to see so much. And then, if we are able to, we can pass it on. Come back and say, look, I found the light. It's right here.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it is just a little bit. But how cool that, you know, so many of us are having these experiences and sharing them. And there is, you know, similarities. And it feels so comfortable to be able to talk about this now.
I have the same feeling, and I'm just glad that there's that receptivity and that it is global. It isn't just one niche area, one tiny little piece of the population, but it's a global thing where people are going, this is okay. And we are learning and we're going together into, I think, a wider appreciation consciously of the potential we have to develop things like telepathy, remote viewing, mm-hmm. all of these abilities that have been kind of set aside because we need workers to go into plants and work, you know, 12-hour shifts and not think about or have the energy to think about anybody else. And so that might be shifting. Amazingly enough, AI might be helping that in a way that you know, because there's so much pushback about AI, but the things that it allows us to do, the things that allows us to see, we are transcending the old way of hands-on hard labor, 24/7, push, push, push into what else can I bring to the equation? What else can I do? How can I help? And that's huge. That's huge. But we have to get over the kicking and screaming 2-year-old part first.
Yeah, I see. That's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, whenever there's any new technology, there's always a thing of, well, the computers, you're just so lazy. No, like calculators, you know, you weren't supposed to, in school, you couldn't use a calculator because that destroyed your brain. Well, it made math easier.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Not everyone, but there are a whole lot of us who hate math.
Well, you know, okay, put a dollar sign by it. All right, it made that easy too. Okay, you could figure it out. But that was tough because the pushback was, no, you can't do that. And then it's like, okay, we have things way beyond that now to help us learn, help us become schooled, educated, and informed. But each little thing like that, where the technology increases, improves, expands, then there is that, is it helping? Are we really going forward? And yeah, we are. You can't get in space without it. Mm-hmm. Okay? You can't take a canoe and go out in space. So we have to go from the canoe to the rocket ship. And that involves math, and AI is part of it. I'm off my soapbox now.
No, I like what you said. That's cool, because I hadn't thought about a lot of what you said before, so I appreciate it.
I'm dealing with that, because I do think we have so many things to benefit from, but we do have to have some kind of guardrails on it, and that's going to work itself out as we go, as everything else has. So, okay, your website, the books are available on Amazon. And all three of them. I just, when I saw that, I thought, we have to talk about that. L.A. Ice.
Yeah. Thank you very much for talking about that. That's very close to my heart, as you can imagine.
It takes somebody who's been there, done that, to be able to understand, have the empathy, the consciousness to understand the pitfalls, how you get around it, what the real hurdles are, and that loneliness that says, maybe I'm not enough. You know, maybe I can't do this. And you're proof you can. So there you go. Okay, the two books, Before We Were Born, a novel, and that's about the two souls who meet together, and they have some hard bumps, but it's a really cool story. And then Meet Me in Heaven, they come back again, different scenario, same souls, and expanded story. How's that? That's in a nutshell. Okay, that's a real quick overview, but available on Amazon and your website.
My website is called spirit-fiction.com.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for writing. Thank you for having the courage to check out the mediumship aspect of your life and decide that that was a road to go, because that's where these stories come from. Just really plain and simple. These stories come from a knowing that helps expand the horizon for people who wonder, what's it like? Where did we come from? Did we plan it? Yes, we did. We don't remember it. That's the fine print.
Yes, that's right.
So, always fine print. Part. Yeah, so thank you.
Yes, of course. How cool that, you know, so many of us are having these experiences and sharing them, and there is, you know, similarities, and it feels so comfortable to be able to talk about this now.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to FinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.